This is Theory of Change. I'm Matthew Sheffield.
Thanks for joining me for another episode. Before we get into today's program, I just wanted to remind everybody that Theory of Change is part of the Flux Media Network. So go to flux.community for more podcasts and articles about politics, religion, media, and society and how they all intersect. And you can go to theoryofchange.show to get the archives of this program. And if you're a paid subscriber, thank you very much. You get complete unlimited access to all the video, audio, and transcripts. All right, so with that little announcement out of the way, let's get into today's program. Besides being thoroughly corrupt and authoritarian, Donald Trump is also incredibly strange, especially in his attitudes toward sex and women. And his strangeness is filtering down into the Republican electorate as a whole, turning MAGA into something more than just a political slogan. It's becoming a sexual fetish. It's really something to see. And joining me to discuss that is Amanda Marcotte. She is a senior writer at Salon.com, and she has been doing a lot of very interesting research and writing on all this that I have been wanting to talk about with you, Amanda. So welcome to Theory of Change.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think the American political media doesn't really talk about a lot of this stuff at all because national journalists have to pretend that nobody has sex and nobody goes on dates. These things don't happen. And so you've basically kind of had the field to yourself a little bit in this regard, I have to say. And so tell us, what the hell is going on with MAGA and the sexualization of MAGA?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated subject, I suppose. I've been writing about it a lot on different levels. I hadn't even thought of it as something I was specializing in, but I think that what we're seeing is a few threads. Evangelical Christianity has really had a lot of dramatic changes in its self-presentation around sexuality and gender and issues like that, even as they're ideological beliefs about these things have not changed at all. And then you are seeing this like dramatic, a lot of the coalition that Donald Trump has built, and one of the reasons that the Republican Party has become so incredibly dependent on him, is he speaks to this like group of, I would say, secular male losers who are very difficult to mobilize. Like losers kind of are hard to get to vote.
Yeah.
And Trump, I call it the dirtbag bat signal, the sort of Joe Rogan audience of male insecurity, just this like rat's nest of that. And I think that those two have kind of come together in this way. It is about sex and dating. It's about masculine self-image. Trump, because he is a sociopathic narcissist, I think he actually has this real talent for sort of speaking to people's deep insecurities, because what is a narcissist but a person whose entire life is about like the conflict between their both the part of them that has this like overbearing sense of self, this like almost godlike sense of self, and then the secret fear that they actually are the worst, which we see with Trump all the time.
Well, he has so many insecurities of his own that he's very good at playing to other people's. I think that's really what it comes down to. And you do see that also in the elections where he's not on the ballot, that the Republicans just have much lower turnout because there is really this subset of people who they like him as a person, or at least they're inspired by him.
He's an aspirational figure. I mean, he's definitely like, when you look at like the chodes that follow Elon Musk and him on Twitter and whatnot, that's kind of like Pepe the Frog dudes. Like, so much of it is like, oh wow, he's a big fat gross loser like me that smells like a butt and ketchup and is repulsive in every way, and yet somehow he manages to be successful. And that speaks to a certain mentality of people that want to be successful without being good at stuff.
Well, and we're certainly seeing that with the Trump Media and Technology Group recently. They had to disclose to the public that they lost $58 million last year and made only $4 million. So this is par for the course for a Trump business.
Yeah, I think Timothy Noah, if I recall, he wrote about this recently for the New Republic. I think that there are actually more people that invested in Truth Social than are users of it.
Oh, wow. That is hilarious, if that's true. Yeah, they have, about 63 million shares, I believe, or something like that. Yeah, so there's a lot of shares.
It might be that there's more Trump donors than Truth Social users. Either way, the point is, it's such a bad service that people won't take it even though it's free, but they will pay him money for this thing. That's not...
Yeah, they won't use it, but they'll own the stock in it. If you're too extreme, too right-wing, crazy for Twitter under Elon Musk, he's basically opened the doors for everyone who is a complete psychopath, right-wing nut job, and said, come on in on Twitter. And they have. And so Trump has basically no market, if there even was one to begin with.
Yeah, I would say there was never really a market for it because, and Elon is learning this the hard way too, the selling point of these services to those guys, to trolls, to right-wing trolls, is not their opportunity to speak to other losers like themselves. It's so that they can annoy people that they don't like because they feel, on some level, rejected. There's always such a mentality of resentment and envy towards liberals. There's this real right-wing rhetoric is all shot through with this real FOMO almost of the sense that that the left is having a good time and they're the ones that have all the musicians and artists and comedians and that and the fun friends and the good parties. And so it cultivates this childish desire in some people, and we see it all the time on social media, to just pull on their ponytail then. And so without the liberals there to troll, there's not really any purpose for a social network of just a bunch of fascists.
Yeah. Well, and this vibe exists with their romantic lives, such as they are, as well. Because, it is absolutely the case that when you go on various dating websites, there are no women on profiles saying things like, if you like Joe Biden, swipe left. That's just not happening. And so, whereas, in fact, there are a lot of women that are, for very good reason, and I've heard from a lot of women that they basically were like, I used to sometimes date Republicans, and once Trump came along, and I just don't bother with it anymore, because if you actually like Trump and you're a guy, you're an asshole. Why would I want to be with you? It's got to be very depressing for them.
Yeah, I think it is true that it's really underestimated how much perceived or an often real romantic rejection is fueling a lot of the resentment that a lot of the men that get in, especially sort of the low propensity voters that Trump kind of pulls on that are difficult to get out.
The Rogan stands. Yeah.
Yeah. I think a lot about the Proud Boys and when they came onto the radar, I think by then most people's perception of them were just that there were this paramilitary neo-fascist organization, right? What was lost is that in the beginning, the Proud Boys, when Gavin McInnes was kind of putting them together, a huge part of their sales pitch was, we're going to make you better with women. It was a lie. Gavin got these guys to do a bunch of stuff that actually made them lonelier and less attractive to women. For instance, the Proud Boys only hang out with each other. They never speak to women. And so they get worse at it, right? Their entire social life kind of is built around right-wing politics, which is just a terrible way to meet women. And so they actually become more unattractive. But what's funny about that is it's this circular logic. Therefore, they become more addicted to the MAGA lifestyle because it's the only people that will have them anymore.
Yeah, well, it is a self-fulfilling curse in a sense that they become less effective and then also less able to realize that they're less effective in their dating. And the other kind of interesting thing that isn't talked about a lot with this is that younger people, generally speaking, have been leaving evangelical denominations like the Southern Baptist and whatnot for a number of years, and they're just been bleeding members. But since Trump came along, there has been a small percentage of people who were in other Christian denominations who now identify as evangelical. And so it's like, it has been a little bit of a gravitational effect for them. And because like they feel like, well, these are the people that agree with me politically. So I guess maybe they're on to something where I don't know. We can't tell what's going on through their heads.
It's interesting. It's like, I was reading that book, Exvangelicals, last night, and she had an interesting statistic, which was in 2006, I do believe, 23% of Americans identified as white evangelicals. That's dropped to 15%. But that includes, like you said, it's actually dropped more in one regard in terms of like people that are like church-going evangelicals, because a huge percentage of self-identified evangelicals, I do believe up to 40% now, do not attend church, do not belong to a church. Like, they derive that identification from watching like Matt Walsh videos or something.
Yeah. No, it is. And it's an identity rather than a belief system. And I think we can definitely see that in regards to the whole trad wife thing, which you have been writing about quite a bit recently. So for people who don't know what this whole trad wife thing is, what the hell is it? And we'll go from there. There's a lot to talk about.
Well, on one hand, I feel like trad wife is kind of like one of those self-explanatory terms. It just means traditional wife. But actually what it is it's an internet phenomenon. It's like a hashtag trad wife, right, kind of thing. And the idea of it is it's a bunch of social media influencers who present themselves in idyllic terms, like they're influencers. So everything about them is kind of this like fantasy, but it's like a very politicized fantasy in that like they're pushing this idea that women have been tricked by feminism into believing that they should have a life outside the home, that they should want careers, et cetera, et cetera. And that in fact, the real path to women's happiness is to be a stay-at-home wife, and not only like a stay-at-home wife, but like a submissive stay-at-home wife, right? Like most of them are very Christian. A lot of them don't lead with that, but a lot of it is Christian propaganda, right? Like right-wing Christian propaganda. And you discover pretty shortly after, like, you might follow trad wives because you like their sourdough videos, or you might envy their beautiful kitchens or whatever, their little sweet obedient children. But then what you get is this like message that it's because I adopt this like right-wing Christian view of male headship in the house and female submission, and look how wonderful my life is. And it's kind of a difficult subject to sort of explain in full to people, because like a lot of stuff on social media, there's actually a shocking amount of diversity within this kind of world. I mean, they're all selling the same fantasy, right? Of like women's joy is through submission, but some of them are kind of like trying to sell themselves to women. Some of them are a little more obviously selling themselves to men. And kind of what pitches changes like person to person. So it kind of can be a diffuse trend.
Yeah. Well, and the religious motivations are different also as well, because like actually a huge percentage of these women are Mormon, and a lot of them are evangelical, and some of them are just there because they want you to go to their OnlyFans also.
Yeah. Well, and there's some crossover. But yeah, I do want to be clear that it's like a lot of Mormons and then a lot of evangelicals. And while both have very like rigid and sexist gender roles expectations, like the theology of them is a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, but in terms of, it does seem like that the audience, like they sort of understand that these are different things that are going on, but some of them don't quite understand that, I think. And so It's interesting because, yeah, like as you were talking about, I mean, there is quite a bit of kind of a fetish marketing subtext to a lot of the videos that they're making, whether it's showing the making sure that they put their breasts very large and out front, and so you don't miss them.
It's true. Like so much of the trad wife stuff on TikTok, when I first started researching this, I expected it to mostly be like what I was told it was, which was influencers that are selling a fantasy to women of like an understandable fantasy of kind of almost like slipping back to childhood, but like as a wife, like wouldn't it just be nice to give up on all these adult responsibilities to make money and make decisions and take care of yourself and instead just have a man take care of you, right? And there is some of that content, but yeah, a lot of it was just here I am in a negligee, like stirring some vague thing in a pot really hard. I found a photo of like one trad wife influencer and I put it up. I didn't even notice this. Like a lot of the people in my comment section did. She was kind of like sexily posed over a bowl that she was stirring. But when you actually look at it, it's a colander. It wouldn't have something that you can stir in a colander. I didn't even bother to check that part of her photo.
Yeah. Well, and it's, well, because, yeah, because like that's the other half of it is that it is a fantasy to the men as well. And that fits to the Trumpian worldview as well, because like you've got on the men's side, of course, this enormous plethora of male content creators and influencers that's the fantasy that they're selling, that we will, if you follow my advice, you will be able to be a high value man and you will be able to get someone who will do whatever you say. And like that's, they're playing into that for people who actually believe that stuff, that they're kind of like the sort of the virtual Christian wife for them in some sense.
Well, and it's funny to me because I feel like there's a long tradition in conservative politics of packaging a political message as like self-help, right? But it's on steroids in the 21st century as part of the MAGA movement. Like a lot of people like buying into social media stuff that purports to give you advice on how to make your sex life better, how to make your home life better, how to make your marriage better, how to be more attractive, how to be better at your job, other things like that. And actually what it is it's glib bullshit that is just reeling you in for what its real message is, which is this fantasy claim, this nostalgia, this functionally a fascist nostalgia for the idea that in the past, before Roe versus Wade, before Brown versus the Board of Education, before all these things, life was good, and it's only those progressive changes that are why you personally are finding it hard to achieve the things that you want to in life.
Yeah. Well, and that's important because the actual policies that could be made to allow people to have a single income household, they're against them. Yes. They're against family leave. They're against higher minimum wage. They're against unions. They're against national healthcare. They're against all of these things. And so that's why it really is a fantasy. And, you know, and it is destructive in a sense because they are, it's like, I mean, in some ways it's kind of like the conservative feminism of Sheryl Sandberg, I would say, that you can have it all, but don't actually do anything about the system.
Yeah. And at least she was open to the criticism, at least on the surface she was, and they are not. Yeah. It is interesting because it's like, for instance, like in my like my in-depth article that I did on some of the people that are fighting back against trad wives online, like I opened talking about this Mormon influencer named Hannah Nealman. She runs a little Instagram and all these other social media like feeds called Ballerina Farm. And that's because she used to be a ballerina and now she's a farmer's wife, supposedly. And like they have 8 children. She's only 33, which is kind of wild to me. and they run this farm. And the whole kind of premise of the Instagram feed and their other marketing is that they have somehow made this like fantasy of self-sustainability happen, that they have this farm and they raise these animals and they sell farm goods. And on that money, they're able to have this like enormous family and this perfect expensive kitchen and this gorgeous house and all this extremely expensive stuff. And what she doesn't really talk about is that it's because her husband is the son of the JetBlue founder, not because they make a ton of money on their little farm project.
And they, I mean, that is kind of the fantasy behind all of these accounts. Either they have money independently from that or they don't, but they're just pretending to in the hopes that they can get endorsements and whatnot for their social media.
And if you think about that, then that means that kind of by definition, none of these tradwife influencers are actually stay-at-home wives. They are professional content creators. Their job and my job aren't all that different. I'm just more honest about it.
and it's true. And some of the more, some of the right-wing audience does understand that. And the men in particular, some men do criticize these content creators for that. And saying that, well, look, if you really are sincere about wanting to be a trad wife, you need to get off of social media. You can't be a trad wife if you're a real trad wife, if you're out there prancing around for a million Instagram followers.
It's funny because, and that's where the Mormon thing, I think, really kicks in, because you're ex-Mormon, right? So that there's like a long tradition there of not necessarily being like you must be a stay-at-home, non-employed mother, right? But that there's a lot of discourse about like having a workout from the home kind of job so that you are present for your children. So it's a little less like overt about the idea that women should not be making money, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're not like,
I mean, it is still better.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's still better if you aren't. But yeah. Well, and then to the Mormon thing, and one of the other things that you talk about in that is that a lot of these women who are making this content, they clearly are not following the Mormon doctrines in their lives, including specifically with regard to the undergarments that Mormons are supposed to wear. Like they're wearing these clothes that very clearly would not be allowed if you were actually wearing them.
I love that so much. I cannot tell you how much. So in my reporting on this, I spoke to this wonderful couple. They're named Jordan and McKay Forsyth. They just go by Jordan and McKay online. Look them up. They're so much fun. They're ex-Mormon, and they did an entire video about how Mormon influencers aren't wearing their garments. I was like, why is this such a big deal? And they're like, because it's mandatory. And the fact that church is giving them a pass speaks volumes about how much this is propaganda.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, like, there is a long tradition in Mormon culture of doing this sort of thing, like allowing members who very clearly do not live the expectations and requirements. And they never face any accountability, quote unquote, for that. I mean, like the Jack Dempsey, for instance, the boxer, the mid 20th century boxer, he was regarded as a Mormon, but he didn't follow any of their practices. He smoked, he drank, he had any sort of traditional Christian lifestyle, quote unquote. And they never did anything to him. Never. Whereas if you're a regular Mormon and they find out that you're smoking and drinking, they will come to you and start harassing you about, oh, you need to give that up. And I mean, even in Mormon culture, like, unfortunately, there are Mormons who will literally go and feel your body to see if you're wearing the garments underneath. It's so creepy. Yeah, these women are not being subjected to that. Very obvious.
Yeah, no, I mean, look at their pictures. It's impossible.
Yeah. But it's, and yet there is this, that really is, though, this whole milieu, it really does speak to this constant tension that right-wing Americans live with every day of their lives, because
They know that they can't prove their beliefs that evolution is fake, or that vaccines are harmful, or that well, in the case of Mormons, that Native Americans were our ancient Jews. They know none of their beliefs are provable, and they also know that their lifestyle mandates are oppressive and annoying.
And off-putting.
Yeah. And yet they continue to believe them. When I was Mormon, I was constantly had that tension in my mind that, like, for Mormons, their dating experience is much, like, as bad as it is for everybody else on dating apps and whatnot. In the Mormon culture, they have congregations that you're supposed to go to as a young single adult, and their sole purpose is to get you to marry somebody in that congregation. That's why they exist. And you're also chaperoned by, like, a 60-year-old at these events. You can't have your own congregation of young people. No, it has to be run by old people. Yeah, so it's just like, it's a horrible tension. They all live in their own cognitive dissonance.
Yeah, and I think evangelicals have a very similar situation going on, which is, and you see this happen a lot, and it's kind of getting worse. It was bad in the Bush years, and it's been bad for like 40, 50 years, but it seems like it's getting even more pronounced as they're trying to sort of vacuum over those contradictions. On one hand, they know that the prohibitions against sex before marriage, the prohibitions against abortion, and while they're not necessarily like all against birth control, it's kind of discouraged or at least stigmatized. All of this comes together to create a very strong and accurate image of them being just really against sex. But you know, it's not popular being against sex. Like, sex is super popular. Sex is more popular than puppies and ice cream, I always say. Most people have sex, like 95% of people.
And certainly more than any politician.
Yeah. Yeah, 95% of people have sex before marriage. It's incompatible with modern American life. And so what you get is a lot of propaganda and books and videos and sermons where evangelical leaders try to position themselves as like, we're not against sex. If you follow our rules, you're going to have the best sex of your whole life. It's going to be just so fulfilling. It's just going to be amazing. It's an obviously false promise, as anyone who has had sex could probably tell you. But of course, this pitch is being made to virgins. And that's the like bait and switch that they're trying to pull off. And it kind of requires like an ad hoc conspiracy of sorts of everyone just not talking about the fact that in reality, we find that couples that do wait until marriage and do all follow all the evangelical rules have really high rates of sexual dysfunction and unhappiness because that just doesn't
divorce
work.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they don't even know who the other person really is, or even themselves. That's the other thing. It's just a bunch of ignorance piled upon ignorance, both individually and sort of philosophically. That's really what it comes down to. But this is very important and becoming very important politically for them as well, I think, and because there's that old saying that right-wing Christians used to say about gay people, that they can't reproduce, so they have to recruit.
The opposite
is but the opposite is true for the Christian right, that they cannot recruit anymore. And so they have to reproduce. That's the only way that they can get anybody to sign up for their oppressive alternative lifestyle.
Even then, most of the loss that they're seeing in terms of like losing membership is younger people. So you can raise somebody to be evangelical. You can bully them into believing it for a long time, but a lot of them are going to grow up and start to be like, this isn't working for me.
Yeah. Well, and it is in fact the case, like with Mormons, that now there are more former Mormons than there are current Mormons. And similar things are happening with evangelicals as well, to your point. There is a little bit of pushback, though, for among some of these Christian conservative content creators who are women, that they, I think some of them have finally understood what it is that they are advocating for. So like Ali Beth Stuckey, who is this commentator for the Blaze, I believe. And some of these women have begun to occasionally say, okay, this is really horrible what you guys are saying. Like they have said that recently with, there was this right-wing furor about a video of women dancing to a rap song in Louisiana that it set off the right-wing fascist out there, that they were saying, how dare these women go out there and dance to this jungle song or whatever? Why are they not home behind this stove serving their man? And some of these right-wing Christian women were like, okay, I'm not down for that. But they're in this weird place where they don't, I don't know if they ever will come out and just be like, look, you guys are wrong about everything. I don't think they can.
I don't think that they can, because they've sort of built their life around this. But it's certainly, yeah, it's certainly younger women hopefully are seeing this and realizing they need to hit the eject button before they've gotten in too deep. Because, yeah, like the thing is, back in the Bush years, like the Christian right, like definitely kind of marketed itself as a chivalrous movement, right? You heard a lot about chivalry. And there's a certain appeal and rationalization to the idea that, well, there's like a sexual hierarchy, but at least it obligates men to protect and cherish women, right? Like pets, admittedly, or children, but not like equals, yeah. But like there's still like
the man has to submit to Jesus at least.
Yeah. But now like they don't even bother with that. It's just mean. And I think that they've given up on that argument. And it's I don't know like how you like they've just given up on persuasion, I think. And that's the end problem here.
It's interesting to watch from afar. It's nice not having to be in the middle.
I bet.
Yeah. If only we didn't have to share a country with these people. That's the only downside. I'd like it to be further afar. But in the political realm, there's like Turning Point USA has really been pushing, ramping up a lot of propaganda aimed at young women to try to get them married off and having kids as soon as possible, mm-hmm. to kind of prevent them from seeing the world on their own or just seeing other people or seeing other cultures, other idea sets. And they've really kind of pushed that quite a bit. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's this kind of a twofold thing. You have like a lot of this kind of trad wife type material out there that's like hyping this idea that getting married young and all that is wonderful and great. And again, I do think that there is I don't want to discount that there is like a surface appeal to the idea that it would be nice to like never have to grow up and never have to be responsible for your own decisions, be responsible for household finances, be responsible for going to a job every day and doing it well, right? And that has a certain appeal. But on the other hand, when you actually see the statistics of where young women are at, you realize that while people might enjoy that fantasy for like, if especially you've been at work all day and it's been hard and you might go look at some trad wife stuff and think about it for like 10 minutes. And then the next day you're like, nah, I'm not going to do that. So where persuasion is not working, I think we're starting to see force and trickery come in. And obviously the most salient example of the force is Dobbs is repealing Roe versus Wade and starting to ban abortion. But that's coming with there's been a real uptick of like, and Peter Thiel has been funding this a lot too, of propaganda being decimated on online that's trying to get women to give up on the most effective forms of birth control with lies, yeah. saying it's bad for them. Yeah. And I think that's starting to work because
if you don't mind, I actually have a clip that I want to play on that. So, yeah, so I got a clip on that. Alex Clark, who is a commentator for Turning Point USA, who focuses exclusively on young women, and she's an evangelical, and she basically, her biggest thing is lying about birth control to 20-something. So I'm going to play a clip
where she says some false information about that.
Well, all of a sudden, women are waking up to how absolutely toxic hormonal birth control is. It accelerates aging. It amplifies feelings of anxiety and depression. It depletes our bodies of vitamins and minerals. It makes sex painful. It causes migraines, weight gain. It can affect how attracted we feel to our partners. What else am I missing?
I know that. Oh, my gosh. What else? It can cause so many hormonal acne. So people think, oh, I went on to fix my acne. Well, it can cause acne. It can cause, yeah, infertility issues in the future, not directly, but because it's depleting all of these essential vitamins.
Yeah. All lies. I just want to be very clear. Yeah. When I started the pill, my acne just went away. I had bad acne as a teenager and it just went whoop. As soon as I was on the pill. So I'm just going to put that out there. Anyway, like, here's what drives me nuts. This has been a talking point that comes and goes for like ever since, like at least since the 90s, right? And it's always been untrue. And what's also really frustrating about it is it's built on this assumption that is flat out untrue, which is that the medical establishment would let women have access to dangerous medications.
Yeah.
Or like,
it would do all those things. Yeah.
Yeah. That allow us to like have sex, like as if there was so much like support socially for women having like sexual freedom that the risks would ever be overlooked. And it's like, if you've ever been female and been to a doctor, you will find that that is not true in the slightest. It's just not how it is. Like, the idea that this is assuming a level of respect for women's ability to make choices that I wish was true in American society, but is not.
Yeah, no, it isn't. Well, but, and of course the reason that they're doing this is to what I was saying, that they have to reproduce. It is literally their only way of having any sort of political coalition in the future, because yeah, they're losing young people in droves. And this is why they become so paranoid about racial replacement and all that stuff. And it's just lies upon lies, because of course these illegal immigrants are not, so they very clearly are not shifting the vote totals in any way to the Democrats at all. And the real reason why Republicans are having a harder time demographically speaking is that they're losing young white people. That's actually what it is, because of how they oppress them.
Especially young white women. And I think like a huge part of this, because like a lot of the anti-birth control thing is like not just about getting people to reproduce, but also getting young women to give birth before they're ready, before they know they're ready, is like a great way to derail their life. I don't think I'm only speaking for myself when I say, like, before you're like 25, 26 years old, you're not necessarily the best decision maker in terms of who you're sleeping with, maybe Republicans. But like, I think that there is like not to make it too sinister, but I do think that a huge part of this is like hoping that college girls and very young women get rid of birth control methods that are very effective and switch to condoms, which a lot of men don't want to wear, and that they get pregnant and then they find themselves submitting to marriages that they weren't necessarily going to make if they had total freedom of choice there. Now, I don't know how true that is, because I think what actually happens is women still do not marry those men and end up just being single mothers or finding a way to abort the pregnancy even where it's banned. But I mean, I think that's the goal here.
Yeah, well, and they do, I mean, they do openly talk about the idea that when you look at women who are married versus women who are not, that non-married women are more likely to vote Democratic. And so by their definition, if we can do anything to make women get married, and for whatever reason, we don't care, we feel like that will help us. And it's magical thinking in some sense, though, because it doesn't factor in that, well, maybe the percentage of women who are interested in being married at all are more likely to be conservative, because there's plenty of people out there that are like, well, what's the point of getting married? I don't see the point of it.
when I can have the same effects as not without the ceremony.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of, I think it probably is a little bit of both, right? That's my, I think that both women that are more conservative probably get married younger, so thus are more likely to be married.
Yeah.
And then, and then I do think that marriage can make women more conservative because men are more conservative than women. And because we live in a male-dominated society, men's opinions tend to become the dominant one in a married couple more often than not. Like, they pull women in their direction more than vice versa, if nothing but to keep the peace, right?
Well, and then it's also a matter of interest as well, because women tend to not follow politics as a hobby compared to men, but a smaller percentage are interested in it compared to men. And that's just how it is, at least how things are right now, at least in this country. Yeah. So I think you're right about that. And so like that really is the motivation, and it's just so much manipulation, and I don't think it's sustainable for them. Rather than admitting, look, we have ideas that people hate, let's become more moderate. They're not going to do that.
We're seeing that a lot, like that play out really like dramatically with the Dobbs decision. Like, I think they've been caught really flat-footed by how angry it's made people. I've done this work my entire career, and I've been caught flat-footed by how angry it's made people. And I have some long, boring theories as to why that might be, but like, it doesn't really matter. Like, what's happened is, by banning abortion, they made people more pro-choice and more adamant.
And they made people realize how radical they were. Like, because like, I think that really is kind of the linchpin of reactionary political success, is camouflaging their radicalism. If you talk to your average Republican, or let's say your average Republican leaner, so an independent who says they're not a Republican, but they vote for them, in their mind, they actually think that the Democratic Party is more extreme than the Republican Party. They really believe this.
Yes.
That is the foundation of reactionary organizing, is camouflaging extremism and making conservatives think that they're centrist, basically, I think, in a lot of ways.
I think a lot of people, I know a lot of like pro-choice Republicans, and what I would find in my discussions pre-Dobbs with them was that they really wanted to talk about the subject as if it was a matter of personal opinion instead of policy, right? And they wanted to talk about what they perceived as, they saw the abortion issue as a bunch of meany feminists being mean to the sweet little church ladies who just don't like abortion. And it's like, no, I don't care if you don't like abortion, just don't try to ban it, right? And by banning it, they've made, they've made feminists, they've proved feminists were right all along, that it was never about somebody's personal choices. That's why we called it pro-choice. Like, it was always about letting people, like that the religious right was literally trying to take away extremely crucial healthcare access.
Yeah, well, and they're doing that with this birth control stuff. I mean, there is obviously no fertilized egg at risk when a woman is using hormonal birth control methods.
Yeah, well, but they will lie about that through their teeth. It's insane. And to the point where unfortunately, that propaganda has gotten so widespread that I hear liberals repeat it all the time. They think that the birth control pill kills a fertilized egg. It doesn't. It prevents ovulation. That's how it works.
But speaking of the sort of educated Republican, I think there's another person who kind of really personally crystallized this, I think, recently, which was Katie Britt in her State of the Union response to Joe Biden recently, that she, this is a woman who very clearly is a professional, educated, smart person, independent, has always had a high-paying job and works very effectively and intelligently. But at the same time, she knows that that's not what she's supposed to do.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons her response to the State of the Union went over so poorly is like, she's actually like not all that great at doing the like syrupy fundamentalist trad wife bit, right? I mean, how much?
Yeah, it's not her native language.
Yeah. Even though she's from Alabama, and I feel like they just teach you that stuff from the cradle there. I mean, she had this sort of voice down, the Fundy baby voice thing, but like, she just could not sell it. Like, but she looks the part. And again, I think that she was put up to it by a bunch of like male leadership that told her that this was her way forward in the party and this was how she was going to get more power. And she did her level best, but, and I think that that's generally true. Like a lot of Republican women in leadership know that like being able to sort of flatter and placate incredibly sexist men is the sort of path to success in their party. And so they've made their peace with that, if nothing else.
Yeah. In some level they have. And it's really unfortunate to see, because I mean, I do personally know people who have, you know, had those things happen to them. Like women that I knew when they were teenagers who were so smart and witty, and but then over time they just sort of gave in and lost themselves, and it's awful to see. And I really, that was ultimately one of the reasons that I left Mormonism, was that I didn't like what it did to women. But it was subconscious at first. I didn't have the vocabulary for understanding, well, why is it that these Mormon girls are so different from the non-Mormon ones? I couldn't see it. I didn't understand how to say it at first. And then eventually I realized it. And I was like, well, that's why I don't want to date them.
It's funny. Like, yeah, I often have said my whole like life that like one of the like hardest things for patriarchy to do is to convince men not to see women as human beings, because we obviously are. And you really have to beat it out of boys. And nonetheless, some still manage to keep hang on to like the obvious fact that like women are people and not just helpmeets put here to serve them. I saw a speech by an abortion provider many years ago where he did talk about like why he got into it. And it was literally that when he was in high school, he had a crush on this girl and she couldn't get an abortion with her boyfriend that she was dating. And his just total compassion for her like drove him to go to medical school and become an abortion provider. And I was just like, well, aren't you sweet? Not only were you moved by this girl's plight, but like you didn't even care that she was dating some boy other than you.
Yeah. Well, no, true. And like, but this just bundle of contradictions, it was manifesting recently with the Donald Trump Bible that he's out selling now. A guy who is literally on trial right now for paying off an adult film star that he had cheated on with his wife while she was pregnant is also selling a Bible for $60.
Well, there's a lot of Old Testament prophets who did similar stuff, I suppose.
Well,
maybe not prophets, but figures. Like the evangelicals are always comparing Trump to King David, and it's like, all right, whatever, you guys.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that really is how they've kind of justified it, is that they do see him as God's instrument, even if they acknowledge that he may not live the ideas. And from a theological standpoint, I do think that also their theology also makes them vulnerable to somebody like Trump or this type of thinking, because if you believe, well, I can be forgiven for anything that I do, I'm already forgiven. I can sin as much as I want, like, or where you go to confession and then it's over. Like, if that's really your mentality and your belief, you actually can get away with any manner of sin, quote unquote.
Especially men. I will say in my research on my Trad Wives piece, like a lot of the religious trauma therapists I spoke with said that they've had a huge influx of patients since Trump, because the contradictions are more than a lot of people in the church could bear. And it was a breaking point for them for leaving. So I think we've been seeing an exodus that's probably in larger numbers than the stats show, because of what you said, that like it's been offset by people self-identifying as evangelical, even though they don't go to church.
Yeah. Well, and it's an identity, which is another one of these every accusation is a confession things, like the right-wing Christians, Southern right-wing Christians invented identity politics. That's the entirety of what their movement is about. It's not about ideas. They don't have any ideas. They don't have policies. Their policy is the government shouldn't do stuff, but that's not really a policy or an idea.
It's true. They always yell and scream about like people talking about race and gender. And it's like, well, but it's like conservative forces, like historically that invented these categories in order to classify people based on how much power they're allowed to have. Mm-hmm. Like the concept of Black people didn't exist until racists needed it to justify chattel slavery. Like, and as a lot of gender theorists point out, like the only reason we buy into this myth of like that there are men and there are women and there's no in between and there's no like ambiguity around those two categories, that they're just a black and white categories, is that we need there to be men and women in order to know who's in charge and who's the servant, right? And I think that liberals are just using categories that we've been handed to criticize them, but we're not the people who need them as much.
Yeah, well, and again, and it's something that right wingers don't understand when they talk about that women need to be feminine and men need to be masculine. When they say things like that, they don't understand that people on the left don't deny that either. If a woman wants to be feminine, quote unquote, nobody says no, you can't do that. There's nobody out there saying, no, you cannot wear a dress. If you like wearing dresses, take that off right now.
And one of my favorite contradictions about that is the same people who say that like gender's inborn, unchanging, and immovable also completely lose their minds if a man wears a skirt or a woman does sports or like, yeah, does something considered not of their sort of gender stereotype. And it's like, well, y'all decide, right? Is it inborn and therefore unchangeable by any choice I make? Or is gender performance that we have to just constantly keep up by what the clothes we wear, the choices we make, the like way we present to the world? Like, I feel like you have to choose.
Yeah. Well, and then from a theology, if they do claim to believe that God is this transcendent, non-physical being that contains the essence of everything and everyone, so therefore you can refer to God as female, and that would be correct theologically if you want to. But, you know, if you do that, like they get massively, massively triggered and angry at you or calling God non-binary. Like, of course, like if you're talking about a non-physical being that is eternal, of course it is non-binary. Like, of course it is. Like, but you can't say that to them.
Yeah. Every time that they're like, no, God is a man, I'm just like, what does God have junk? I just want to know. Does God have junk? I never have the courage to ask that, but I'm always thinking it.
I have once in a while asked people, did Jesus die for the aliens? I have asked someone that.
That's a good one.
And yeah, somebody told me that yes, the answer was yes to that. And then I said, oh, okay, well, tell me more. And then they would.
But they wouldn't they be unsaved because they haven't heard the good word? No, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
Yeah, no. See, well, that's the thing. Like, you're not supposed to. You aren't supposed to think about it too much. You really aren't. Like, that's all of this stuff. That's the one consistent thing they have, is that you're not supposed to expect consistency. You're not supposed to think about it. You're just supposed to follow. That's really what it
yeah, costs. If aliens land, are we supposed to meet them with Bibles and be like, oh, good, you're saved?
Yeah, I guess so. See? Well, hopefully we'll have that first contact. We can find that out. All right. Well, so we're coming up on the hour here. So is there any other aspect of this that we haven't talked about that you feel like that we need to cover here?
No, I think aliens is good. That's some fun stuff.
We've reached the natural endpoint. Well, I guess, how about then let's just maybe end that. As much as heretics like you and I do enjoy making jokes of this nature, it is also the case that a lot of these sexist stereotypes and submission narratives they're not dependent on religion either, necessarily.
No. And in fact, I think maybe less so than when I was like first starting out as a feminist writer, but there was like this whole like notion, and Jordan Peterson still kind of mines this territory a lot, that like there's something called evolutionary psychology that and it's not a real science, like, but people present it as it is. And it is also the same kind of just so stories, but they package it as science instead of religion, that women are born to be helpers and men are born to be leaders. And if you start to like dig into it, you find that their claims are just unevidenced in all ways. And
they're untestable also.
Yeah.
Yeah. To say, well, this is how things were for humans 20,000 years ago.
Yeah, it's
how do you know that?
Jordan Peterson and his lobsters is like the kind of thing that sounds persuasive at first glance, and then you give it like 5 minutes thought and you're like, wait, none of that makes any sense. Like, is our society look anything like lobster society? Like,
yeah, no, it's true.
There's claims here that are not testable, like you said, or like comparisons that don't really hold up under scrutiny. So there is a secular version of it, but I do find it interesting that when I look at like secular, like conservative spaces, I don't really see as much of these sort of like elaborate evo-psych like arguments that you used to see. I think it's just Donald Trump has kind of created this permission structure to just be a belligerent jerk about your views without ever even feeling the need to kind of prop up even a half-assed fake proof.
Yeah. And I was talking with somebody, another fellow ex-Republican, about that. And he made the point that I think was very interesting, which is that all of the arguments you used to see of this nature, they weren't for the general public. They were actually for the moderate Republican. And once the moderate Republican was just like, yeah, I'll just vote for you no matter what you do, then they don't even bother with the pretense anymore. And I thought
that's a really good point.
An interesting idea.
Yeah.
And so, and that is, yeah, why I would say, you know, to the extent that there are still any moderate Republicans out there, you guys need to fucking stand up for yourself. Come on now. Like, fascism is dependent on conservatism to win.
Yes.
It cannot exist without it. And conservatives need to understand that, and they need to assert themselves, because they are the first ones who will be up against the wall. Like, the conservatives will. Who they come for first.
When that's literally how Donald Trump is operating, right? He's following the fascist playbook of get the conservatives on your side and then purge them from the party. Hitler did it with the Night of the Long Knives. Trump does it with tweets, but it's and that is less violent, so I'll give him that. But it's kind of the same premise, right? You use them as a ladder to climb to power, and then when you've gotten there, you just take them out.
All right. Well, so Amanda, people who want to keep up with your stuff, how would they do that?
I recommend just going to salon.com. I write there every day. I have a Twitter account under my name, Amanda Marcotte. I post there once in a blue moon. I also am on Blue Sky, which is a little bit more fun for me these days. So check me out in those places.
All right. Sounds good.
It's been a great discussion today.
Thank you. I've had a blast.
All right. So that is the program for today. I appreciate everybody joining us for the conversation. And you can always get more if you go to theoryofchange.show. You can get the video, audio, and transcript of the episodes. And if you are a paid subscribing member, thank you very much. You are
making the show possible. And if you can't afford to subscribe right now, I understand that, but please tell a friend or a family member about the show and ask one of your favorite podcasters to have me on. I do those once in a while as well. Those are always fun. So appreciate everybody for joining me today. I will see you next time.